fire rescue, EMS, law enforcement. These are the three components of public safety. And those who answer the call are the first responders. Welcome to another episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders with your host, Steve Green. Five Alarm Task Force presents some of the best instructors and mentors in public safety today to educate, elucidate, and entertain. No topic is out of bounds, and every opinion has value. Five Alarm Task Force is pleased to welcome our new sponsor, Insight Fire Training LLC, your provider for the best fire service thermal imaging training, and our promotional partner, Dalmatian Productions, the Firehouse Tribune, and our new promotional partner, Chief Miller Products and Sites, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, fighting to extinguish firefighter cancer since 2004, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 Great Florida Fire School. Remember, our ultimate goal is for you to be safe and return home after every call. So insert those earphones or turn up those speakers. The 5 Alarm Task Force is being dispatched right now. New technology for the fire service seems to appear almost every day, and that technology demands a learning curve, especially if we're talking about thermal imaging cameras. That's where Insight Fire Training LLC is your best bet. With an excellent reputation across the U.S., Insight Fire Training will meet all your TIC training needs. Their curriculum is peer-reviewed and has been used internationally. Their instructors are Level 1 thermography certified, and they have taught in 33 states and 4 countries. Their courses run from introductory to training the trainers. Courses are available online, classroom, classroom hybrid, and even live fire. Insight Training LLC is proficient in over 40 thermal imaging cameras, so you'll feel confident that they will know your make and model. Best of all, programs are customized to your specific needs, and their cadre of fire service veterans are vetted craftsmen of Project Kill the Flashover. They are so proficient that they have trained TIC manufacturers on how best to use and sell their own product. And from now through September 10th, if you're going to Firehouse Expo in Nashville, register for their 8-hour live fire class that will be offered on 2 separate days. That's Insight Fire Training LLC. Look them up online at insightfiretrainingllc.com, your best bet for TIC training. Would you like to meet up with Andy and the team from Insight Training? Well, here's their upcoming schedule. December 9th, 2018, Insight Training LLC will be hosting an 8-hour live fire training event in cooperation with the York County Fire Department. Instructors Andy Starnes, Terrence Shoemate, and Thomas Anderson will lead this session. Please contact Training Officer Omar Casso for registration details at area code 305-281-2222 or via email to omar.casso@yorkcountygov.com. Insight Training LLC, your best bet for TIC training. We want to take a moment to tell you about one of our great promotional partners, the Firehouse Tribune. The Firehouse Tribune is an emergency services web-based platform where individuals can learn, train, and share ideas and experiences. In life, both on duty and off, we live by one creed. Excellence is a habit, not a goal. Interested? Find them on Twitter at FH Tribune and visit their website at www.thefirehousetribune.com. Remember to always work hard, stay safe, and live inspired.
Welcome to Chief Miller. Chief Miller operates the largest social media page dedicated to the men and women of the fire service from around the world. Check him out on Instagram at Chief_Miller. Find him on Twitter at Chief_Miller. And check out the website where you can find Chief Miller Apparel at ChiefMillerApparel.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of 5 Alarm Task Force News and Issues for Today's First Responders. I'm your host, Steve Green. We hope you are well and eager to listen to another excellent episode of 5 Alarm Task Force. I'd like to remind you that you can find this podcast and all of our podcasts on our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv, as well as on iTunes, Google Play, and your favorite podcast aggregator. Just search for 5 Alarm Task Force. When you visit our homepage, please remember to sign up for our newsletter so you'll be the first to know about new episodes, new blog posts, or other Dalmatian news. And if you listen to us via iTunes, please remember to rate us 5 stars. That helps raise our ranking and assists others in finding us more quickly. And of course, we hope you'll visit us on Facebook and like us on Facebook at DalMatProd and at DalMatProd/fire. And if you like the show and you'd like to share your interest with others, drop by our storefront with our friends from Teespring. Just head over to bit.ly/DalMatStore with a capital D and a capital S and choose from several t-shirts or mugs. And remember, a portion of the net proceeds goes to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation. And we have a real important episode for you today. My guest is Brad Behoon. Brad is a 13-year full-time fire engineer paramedic in the Southern California area that also serves as a public information officer on many of the large fires throughout California the last couple of years. Brad has been involved with many nonprofit organizations, including the Terry Farrell Fund, and is the co-organizer of the Stashtoberfest. Did I pronounce that correctly, Brad?
Yep, you got it.
Stashtoberfest, which has raised over $100,000 over the last 10 years for a variety of first responders in need. Co-organizing this charity, he has seen occupational cancer affect the lives of friends and unfortunately seen them give the ultimate sacrifice for the profession. Learning more and more about the hazardous toxins we face, the way toxins affix to and enter our body, and the way the toxins are carried to other aspects of our lives through what NIOSH terms toxic handoff, Brad is determined to educate the fire service about these hazards. And that's what we're going to talk about today. You know that is a big point and part of the mission statement of this podcast, the Cancer Initiative. We've addressed this many times. We've had the summit. We have another summit with the medical staff from the University of Miami Sylvester Comprehensive Cancer Centers coming up in November. But also, in full disclosure, Brad is part owner of a distribution company for Hygienol full-spectrum firefighter decon products. But as a firefighter himself, his main goal is to first and foremost educate the fire service so that they can make informed decisions and implement procedures and tools to help mitigate the toxins firefighters face on a daily basis. So our goal today is not to endorse or sell. Our goal today is to inform you, firefighters and fire buffs, because this is important to you. You know, if you're a fire buff and you love to go to the scene and watch firefighters work, you have to remember that if you're in what we call the warm zone, where there's a little bit of smoke and haze and stuff like that, you're susceptible to the same things, the same poisons, the same toxins that firefighters are. So if you're a buff and you'd like to listen to the podcast, we're thrilled to have you with us, but listen very carefully to this. So, Brad, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you on today.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. I know you've had a lot of good speakers on this topic already. It's important in the fire service, so I appreciate you making this part of your mission statement and having me on to discuss this.
Well, it is. It is very important. You know, my whole interest in part of starting the podcast actually began with too many line of duty deaths being published every month in the trade magazines. And so many of them were due, are due still, of those particular are due to health issues that probably are preventable, but we don't make a strong enough effort. Now, as you and I, as we talked yesterday to get ourselves ready for today, the fact is that for a good number of years, we thought that the cancer and these illnesses were simply products of what happened in the tragedy of 9/11 and the brave men and women, our brothers and sisters who went on that pile and worked there for months to try to find remains to bring back to families, and never knowing at that point in time how dangerous their exposure was at that site. And now we've learned over the past probably 10 years that in almost any fire that we face, whether it's a structure fire made of what we think is wood, it's a vehicle fire, and something as simple as a rubbish fire, we are being exposed to deadly toxins and carcinogens. So let's get started on this. Let's talk about the problems and the hazardous toxins that we're exposed to.
Yeah, so you mentioned the World Trade Center, and I mean, they've done studies on the toxins that they faced. I actually went cross-country as part of my charity with the Terry Farrell Fund back in 2012 with a NYPD who was also a firefighter. Fortunately just missed the crash of the towers by 5 minutes because he had to go pick up his partner. But he had throat cancer. The whole trip, he was drinking out of a straw because he couldn't eat normal food because of the results of 9/11 and what he went through. So that was kind of a wake-up call for the fire service, seeing what we're exposed to. And I'm glad in the last couple of years it's been a good topic to discuss and research more in depth, but we still have a long ways to go.
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, as you mentioned too, I mean, I've been doing this Oktoberfest charity forever. We actually have the event on Monday, and we give to firefighters in need, and a lot of the times those needs and those recipients that we have have cancer. So just this year, we have a fire captain, 23 years, who has breast cancer, female firefighter. And so you're seeing it more and more, our brothers and sisters out there getting this, but what is the problem? Let's keep this conversation going. So like you said, the organic compounds that were used in previous times are just not the same of what we're facing today. We're going into these structures with glue lamb beams with toxins in it, where all these chemicals that are used to manufacture the appliances, such as the stainless steel that's used in our appliances, and when that heats up and oxidizes, that the byproduct of that is hexavalent chromium. And if you research hexavalent chromium from NIOSH, it is probably one of the most carcinogenic things that we can encounter. And so this stuff oxidizes in the air. You know, that smoke and that's in these fires is unburned combustibles, so that we are exposed to that.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point to make, because I don't think the average citizen understands that part, that they think smoke, you know, they see a candle burn, they see a little wisp of smoke, but they don't understand that when there's a heavy black smoke coming out of a fire that they're watching on television, newscast or something like that, they don't realize that that's the unburnt combustibles floating out, and that those are real particulates. If you waved a white cloth in that smoke, it would probably come out dark gray or close to being black.
Oh yeah, so we have the soot and byproducts, the PCBs, plastics that are burning in there. Just from, I mean, pretty much almost every house I would say has carpet. The byproduct of burning carpet is lead oxide from some of the materials that they use. Lead oxide is another. It's probably one of the hardest things to remove from your body and skin when it gets on you, and then that gets absorbed in your skin through percutaneous absorption. And as we know, when our body heats up, our ability to absorb that stuff increases exponentially. And like you said, we have the firefighters interior getting this stuff on them. You have the initial phase where you're putting out the fire, but then just the overhaul, all the chemicals that we're being exposed to in overhaul, and are we keeping our SCBA on? Are we doing monitoring?
Right.
And then you bring it outside the fire. The engineers, the people that aren't interior, in what you said, and we talked about the warm zone, how we kind of address it as a hazmat. All that smoke is still drifting depending on the wind direction. You know, we do the uphill, upwind, upstream type thing, but sometimes the wind shifts and you're not able to do that. So the on-scene exposure from the secondary personnel outside, and then the tertiary exposure from where your rehab is set up. You know, we had a church fire where the fog was so embedded in our city, you know, it keeps that smoke down, and firefighters are being affected 2-3 blocks away. So are we looking at those situations and putting those policies in place where we can limit our exposure. And I think the biggest thing is limiting exposure, but let's look at the problem first in all the different areas of what it is in inside our fire station, pulling into the at bay. Are we closing our doors to our turnout gear room? You know, that benzene from the diesel exhaust accumulates over time, and most fire stations you see turnout gear room doors wide open. It's getting those particulates on your turnout gear when you're not even using it, or at the station if you're off duty. So there's a whole wide range of things that you can look at. How are firefighters are being specced out? Are we using cloth? Are we keeping our turnout gear inside the rig? Are we keeping our SCBAs inside the rig? You know, all these little things can contribute to the exposure and the problem, like you said. And I think it goes back to just understanding, you know, we're not in the same firefighter material that we're exposed to like we were back in the day.
Right. Well, you know, the whole concept of cross-contamination is what we're talking about. Because if you take even now for a lot of volunteer departments, and we know that, mm-hmm. you know, close to 70% of the country is protected by volunteers. And even when I was a volunteer, for a long time, I kept my gear in my car.
Yeah.
And so, you know, again, this was back in the 70s. Different stuff was burning back then than today. But there was still, no doubt, there was still some crap in the back then. But I kept it in my car. And then at night, I often would put it up by the stairs in my home so that at least my bunker pants and boots, so I could jump into those, especially during the winter nights when I was in Syracuse. I want to have at least my bunker pants on and my bunker coat, so I bring it into the house. Well, my wife was there. Our first baby was there. I don't, you know, now that I'm learning all about this, I have no idea what I brought back to them. And when we were in the car together, what was I exposing them to? Was it as serious as today? No, but it's still, I was creating cross-contamination by anything, because I had my gloves, I had my gear. We never washed, never even thought about washing gear back then. We even fought magnesium fires on the wheels of VW Beetle buses.
And yeah, I remember one of my first fires when I got hired was a plating fire. So it was a big warehouse where they do different types of plating for metals. And basically the runoff from our water streams was eating away and bubbling the pyrolite of our couplings. And some of the firefighters had rubber boots or leather boots, and they all had to be replaced because it was eating away. So you just put that in perspective as a visual to what we're being exposed to on those type of fires.
Exactly.
And I even asked the hazmat guys that, I mean, I was brand new, it was my first year. I asked the hazmat guys who came out to monitor. I'm like, hey, what's the worst thing that's kind of dangerous to us right now? And they're like, we can't even monitor that. So that was real real comforting back in 2005, one of my first fires and exposures to that kind of stuff, and realizing, you know, then just kind of the visual of what we're exposed to and how hazardous stuff is. And it's different types of fires and different, I mean, we go on different types of calls all the time, and there's probably an exposure to everything. So we go on a vehicle fire. You think of all the plastics and stuff that's been used in car manufacturing, and more of the plastics for the bodies and just the engine components and metal that's burning from engine fires. You think of these floods that are happening. I mean, a catastrophic scale when these responders are responding to these flood incidents and people are in it. They have studies from Hurricane Katrina of all the toxins that were in the runoff from that, including the hexavalent chromium, arsenic, and lead, and nickel, and all the metals and nasty stuff that's in that stuff. So it's not just fires, too.
Exactly.
We're a full risk management service, and there's potential in every single type of call we go on.
Right. I think that's a point that we need to perhaps better educate our citizens to understand that, yes, we take this job. We're, what you want to call us, crazy or passionate, but we take this job and we know that there are risks to it. However, that doesn't mean we have to just, open the floodgates and just, you know, ignore every risk and not take care of ourselves properly. And as we've seen in North Carolina recently with Hurricane Florence and the flooding there, we see the flooding now in Texas that mm-hmm. just got really bad over the last, you know, 48 to 72 hours. We see Hurricane Michael, the damage it did right here in my state, in the panhandle of Florida. And people don't realize that when those winds blow at that level and they destroy buildings, that mm-hmm. releases a whole set of contaminants as well.
Just the infrastructure of the sewage system raising, and, you know, that has to go somewhere.
Exactly.
It's getting released. I mean, that's...
Oh, listen, we know that here. We're going through this last couple of weeks. We've been going through a red tide problem here on the southwest coast of Florida, and it came right around the peninsula, and it's been in the southeast, in the three counties, southeast counties of Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade. Now, it's mm-hmm. lessening off a bit, but part of that is the runoff of the fertilizers that the sugar companies use to fertilize the cane fields up in the northern part of the Everglades, and that runs off. And those fertilizers, that's not just, you know, cream and sugar, folks, okay? That fertilizer might be good for the plants and the cane, but it's not necessarily good for people to be exposed to it.
No, not at all.
And all that runs down into the water, and that's what's killing our fish and causing the red tide, the algae bloom, and the algae bloom in and of itself is dangerous. So we're living in basically a toxic society.
Yeah.
And we have to recognize that.
And you brought up a good point about the volunteer stuff and bringing stuff home. You know, talking to a lot of volunteer firefighters out there, it's kind of an eye opener, and you have that light bulb I've explained this to them, and all of a sudden they're like, oh my goodness, I respond from home. I carry a pager. I have to bring my stuff home because that's where I respond from. What am I bringing home? And they've actually done studies and gone to firefighters' homes and taking swabs, and it's almost just as bad and contaminated in the homes as it is in the fire station.
Wow. Now that's, you know what? That's another whole podcast.
I mean, yeah.
We could do that. And that's an important topic to do.
And you talked about, you know, what you bring home to your child back in the day. And like you said, it's not the same hazards we face now. You still had hazards and we're still bringing stuff home, which is probably not good. But you look at lead oxide and what that does for the development in children. So lead oxide replaces calcium, which is, you know, used exponentially more in children in their growth stage for neurological functions and brain development. Lead oxide will replace calcium and kind of mimic calcium and cause irreversible neurological damage in children if exposed to it.
Well, right. So, and we've seen that with paint. We've seen that with the old paints, lead-based paints. And we've seen children with the blue lips. And we see those developmental problems.
They say that they took the lead out of paints, but if you do a deep dive into the research, there's still some probably microscopic amounts of lead in some paints and the lead oxide in carpets and, you know, who knows what else that they have that stuff in. Well, when stuff burns, what does it turn into? You know, that's the other thing. When it burns, it oxidizes.
Right.
And so it changes the whole chemical nature of things and causes, you know, could potentially make things worse.
Right. Something that might not be transferable in its natural state. Once it burns, that changes it and it becomes a possible contaminant in that format.
Yeah.
I was just going to mention something else, and it was just off the top of my head. I'll see if I come back with it. But okay. I would like definitely to follow up. I think another podcast would be what our volunteers face, especially those who have to wind up bringing their gear home and respond from home, and that study. That's something else. All right. So the problem is that there's really, basically, we have to understand that, as you and I discussed yesterday, that basically every call that we go on that's not an illness call, But any call that's involving really a fire of any type, no matter what it is, what is burning, we have to almost look at, and we've talked about this as, oh, that's what I was going to say, as a hazmat incident. You know, not as big as a huge fuel spill, something like that, but we have to understand that when something is burning, it's releasing contaminants, and for the most part, those contaminants are not good for us.
Yeah, and some of these, yeah, like I said, and some of these heavy metals that, I mean, NIOSH is deemed as carcinogen, carcinogenic. So, you know, it is the soot, it is all the germs and, you know, PCBs, PAHs, hydrocarbons from gasoline and heavy metals. And, you know, a lot of these heavy metals are deemed by NIOSH as carcinogenic that are being oxidized and exposed to on these incidents.
Right. And the point I was going to make slipped my mind for a second was that part of the problem today, as you started talking about the wood, those large beams that are being made,
With the glueland.
Glueland is the other thing, is that we're living in a society where because the hunger for money in business is so great, that we live in a point where if a business has an idea but it doesn't exist, they'll manufacture it with whatever it takes to make it, just so they can sell it to make money. So they don't necessarily look into see what's bad for us, what could be in that, and they just want to do it. They don't care about the risk. They just want to make it, sell it, and make the money.
And yeah, I mean,
and
that's
sometimes we don't know it, right?
And this capitalism at its finest.
Exactly,
and it's a blessing and a curse. We obviously don't want to pay a bunch of money for something, and so we're essentially taking on that risk as well by the consumer purchasing that stuff. But it's a luxury and a curse at the same time.
Exactly.
And you just have to be, knowledge is power. So if you know that stuff and can have that backstory and understand it, and now that we have the knowledge and hopefully we can educate,
right,
what can we do about it?
Right. And again, what's coming in, we don't know. As we mentioned yesterday in our discussion, that right here in the town next to us in Coral Springs, our neighboring town, Parkland, a number of years ago, the Chinese drywall was brought in by a builder. Nobody really knows whether the contractor knew about it, didn't know about it. But the fact was that we had many families in these brand new, very well-to-do condos and homes that had the Chinese drywall that was creating off-gassing mold and mildew and other products that were making the people in the home sick. That's because nobody knew what was in it when it came in. And it was just important to bring it in and build the home, because that's what the focus was on. Not, are we putting in something, you know, dangerous into our homes? You know as well as I do now that we're having a tough sell around the country to get sprinklers put into new homes because there's this lobby by builders that they're ugly and that they cost way too much money. Now, we have the facts that we can now make sprinklers that are almost invisible to the naked eye, and the cost is minimal compared to other building costs, but it's still their push to get as much money out of what they can without having to spend money on something that would be safer for the people who are going to live there. So we're in the same battle now with poisons and contaminants and carcinogens. We're talking about the problem. We've talked about some of these toxins that we're exposed to in the fire service. And I think next what we have to do is we'll take a break, and when we come back, let's talk about how these chemicals stick to us. How is it that, why can't we just, you know, wash our hands and just get it off of us? Why can't it be as simple as that? All right.
Yeah, sounds good.
All right, good. So folks, we'll be right back with our guest Brad Bihun in just a moment, right after these words. So please stay tuned. No matter where we live or no matter the season, there is always work to be done that makes us sweat. Just how can we keep cool? Well, Hennessy Distributing has the answer. Cool towels. Cool towels are 100% cotton towel and pre-moistened with all natural ingredients. The best part? no water is needed. Just open your cool towel pack, remove the towel and give it a couple of shakes, and you're all set. Wrap it around your neck like a kerchief, wipe your face, arms, neck, or any exposed skin, and it is approximately 20 to 30 degrees below the ambient temperature. Wait, did it warm up? No problem. Just shake it a couple of times again, and Cool Towel delivers its refreshing cool touch all over again. When the cooling mixture has expired, use your Cool Towel as you would any cloth or rag around the house. Because it is manufactured from 100% cotton, your Cool Towel is 100% recyclable. For more information or to get your Cool Towel today, visit www.cooltowel.com or call 1-800-918-8323. Remember, you're going to work and you're going to sweat. Make Cool Towel your answer to keeping cool. The tones sound and the dispatcher announces, stations 14 and 16, working residential structure. That was all you needed to hear. You jump up from your chair, head to the engine and climb into the jump seat. As the cue screams, you take stock of your PPE, bunker pants, check, turnout coat, check, hood, check, gloves, check, escape line, check, SCBA strapped on, you're ready. Upon arrival, you jump off the apparatus, grab the loops of the Red Cross lay and head for the open front door where smoke is pouring out. You make sure your buddy's behind you. You crouch low and make your way inside, your trusty SCBA mask hanging on your tool belt. What? Stop everything. What the hell are you thinking? You see it's a working room and contents fire, and the smoke is banking down almost to the floor. Who do you think you are, Superman? One breath of that crap and the smoke will damage you in some way, guaranteed. All the soot, carbon, carcinogens, and other outgassing materials will enter your body through the pores on your unprotected face. Don't be the domino, the first person down that forces everyone else to change their tasks to take care of you. Always remember, face peace on. You have comrades depending on you and a family to go home to. Face peace on.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to this episode of 5 Alarm Task Force. News and issues for today's first responders, and we are talking about a very important issue, and that is the toxins and the carcinogens that we as firefighters face in the work we do. And I apologize to my guest because I mispronounced his last name twice. It's Brad Byan. Brad.
Got it.
Good. Thank you. And he is a fire engineer paramedic in Southern California. He serves as a PIO for many of the large fires throughout California the last couple of years. And even if you're not a firefighter, you know what California has been through the last couple of years with these wildfires. It's been terrible, not only for the forest areas, but for people's homes and belongings and camps and parking areas. And just wonderful places.
Yeah, they're still recovering and up in Santa Rosa area from last year's fires, and Santa Barbara from the Thomas Fire, recent Mendocino, largest fire in California.
History, right. Yeah, we were watching that on the news. So, and yet, people, it's important for you to know that even with our great hotshot firefighters and our urban and suburban firefighters who get called in, they're all part of task forces. A lot of people may not know this, but you see the hotshot firefighters, the ones who march in or parachute in. But in California and a lot of the western states where these fires are common, both urban and suburban firefighters are part of the task forces that are all part of what's called in California Cal Fire. And they're called up in divisions and units that have to go and fight these fires as well. And then other departments move in to cover their regular zones in their communities where they, so it's a big long chain of people helping people all the way through the state of California.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast on the California Mutual Aid Response System and management teams that get activated for these large scale incidents.
You know what, Brad? Let's do that. We'll put that on the schedule. That'd be a great topic.
It's pretty interesting logistically.
I'm sure you know our friend Chris Baker.
Yeah,
and
I do.
And Steve, I don't want to murder his last name, Assistant Chief Steve Przybyszewski.
Right.
Yeah. Also been a guest on the show. Great, great folks, and we could actually make a panel discussion about the Cal Fire response program, mutual aid program.
Yeah, Chris Baker actually just got his PIO cert, so I'm I reached out to him, asked if he was going to get on a team, and maybe I'll see him out there on the fire.
Well, then we send Chris our best wishes and congratulations on getting his PIO cert. That's wonderful.
But what I want
our listeners to know is that when these firefighters, whether they're hotshots or urban, suburban firefighters, when they go out fighting these fires, all that smoke from the burning woodlands, from the burning, everything that's burning, from the brush to the trees, to the homes, to the cars, to the factories, to the businesses that are burning, are all creating this massive cloud of contaminants. So it's bad for them, and it's bad for the citizens as well. And that's why on the news you see a lot of people wearing either kerchiefs or wearing actual masks, respirators on them, because they've been told this stuff can hurt you. So wear these masks. So let's talk about now, once you're in that soup, okay, and the stuff gets on you, why does it stick to us? Why can't we just, use our hands, brush it off, and be done with it and not to worry?
So, I mean, this is, and I'll preface this too, I'm no scientist. I love biology in school. People kind of called me a nerd in paramedic school because I would get down to kind of the deep pathophysiology of things, all the way from the calcium channels in our heart and how the fluid shifts of electrical gradients affect our heartbeat and stuff like that. But which kind of goes into it. So everything in the earth has some type of electric charge.
Right.
Correct. So positive, negative, or neutral. It's just three different types. You either positive charge, negative charge, or neutral charge, which means nothing. So our bodies, as we walk around this earth, have a negative charge to it. And it's not magnetic, it's more of the electric static. So you've ever had that where you rub your feet on the carpet, touch something, and you get this little shock. So the electrical static, that's the differentiation of electricity from the two types of things. So most stuff, like you said, wildfires. Now, if it's just brush and trees and organic compounds, that stuff is a inherent electrical charge. So if you put two electrical charges together, that suit gets on. Our bodies, which are electrical, that's pretty easy to get off with just, a shower and some regular soap and stuff like that. Now you start getting into the chemicals that we were talking about and that we're learning about, and all these studies that come out of the byproducts of burning combustibles in the homes and cars and manufacturing and furniture and the hexavalent chromium. So a lot of those heavy metals, they have a positive charge. So that positive charge and electric charge, they really want to stick together. And so regular soap is not designed, or wipes, regular wipes are not designed and can't remove that stuff. So if you look at lead, there's a little slide here of even just 500 micrograms. I mean, that's a tiny, tiny, small amount. And at a microscopic level, under a microscope, you can see it. But to the naked eye, just looking at it, you wouldn't be able to see it. And that lead has that positive charge that's connecting and staying on your body. So you could wash with soap, do whatever, brush off as vigorously as you can. Those metals and positive cationic material will not come off your body. So that stuff's sticking on us, and that's, absorbing into our skin. And I mean, we know that our skin is our largest organ of our body. And through percutaneous absorption, if you don't get that stuff off, I mean, it's bad for you. So we're seeing these cancer rates rise in the fire service, and we've taken showers, we've used soap, we've used these wipes, but why are these symptoms and cancer rates still going up? And also the inhalation aspect of it. I think from NIOSH, one of the leading researchers there brought up, the inhalation aspect of it. And after I watched that podcast, I had a garage fire a couple go-arounds ago, and it kept recurring through my head that, hey, I'm not on a BA, but all the smoke is coming out, and it's getting oxidized, and there's all these particulates and micro-atomized particles that I'm breathing in right now. So we're seeing the lung cancers. We're seeing the mesothelioma with a 2% higher rate of mesothelioma in the fire service. And that's skin absorption from a lot of these toxins that are getting on us and sticking to us that we can't get off.
All right, so I have to play the devil's advocate, because yes, you just said you're on a garage fire and you weren't on BA. Something doesn't sound right about that to me.
So I was the engineer.
Oh, okay. All right. So that's right. So you were the engineer.
I wasn't up close. Yeah.
Okay.
So I'm on my panel's on the other side, but we talked about that, how, you know, we have these primary, if we look at it from primary, secondary, and tertiary, you know, cold, hot, warm, and cold zone, that was probably what we would call the warm zone.
Right.
And it's just a mindset and philosophy that we're not really thinking of and putting policies in place for.
Yet. And I think that's, you know, that's part of it. We've talked about this. I've talked about this with Bobby Halton, mm-hmm. who was a great guest. And he's just an amazing
He's a wealth of knowledge on this stuff. And
he is.
And spends tons of time on this topic.
Well, on everything. I mean, he can quote you from a book, the chapter, the page, maybe even the word number in. But Bobby is brilliant. And we talked about that. Yeah, the fire service has this reputation of being reluctant to change. And he made a great point. He said, you know, it's not just a fire service. People, we're not often comfortable with making changes. We get comfortable in the way we do things, or what we like to watch, or what we like to listen to, or what we do. And when something interrupts it and changes that, we have a reaction to it. But I think we've seen, and I hope you have as well, out in the LA area, that our fire departments today, at least, definitely our metro departments, and I think more and more our combination departments, and we're getting down to even our smaller volunteer departments. And that was a great news that it came from Dr. Alberto Caban Martinez from University of Miami Sylvester mm-hmm. Comprehensive Cancer Center, is that they're actually working to get this kind of information down to the new recruits in even small volunteer communities with those departments, so that they begin from the very start of their career, even though they're going to be volunteers in the fire service, they're going to know about the dangers of toxins and carcinogens in the fire service and what they can do to protect themselves. And that's
I can speak on that real quick, and this kind of goes into the next segment of the solution. We can come back to it, but just, you know, I went out to New York Fire Department at the Rock, their training center, and they implemented Hygenol at their live fire training. So that goes into the beginning of a firefighter's career, educating them and making it a habit, right, and changing that culture, so it's not this foreign entity to them. They are introduced to it from the beginning of their fire service, and it's kind of just a natural thing to, you know, adopt the
exactly.
Decon.
We did that. I mean, that happened with SCBA. We can go back and look at the stories of when SCBA first came out in cities like Boston and New York and Philly and in LA and Chicago, that people said, what do we got? Schlepped this heavy thing on our back for? We've been going in for years. We've been fine. But eventually, SCBA became not only in use, but it became required use. And in most places, it is on structural fires and vehicle fires today. We made that change. We adapted. We learned first. It's the learning process. We have to learn first. And then once we learn the benefits, we make that change.
Yeah, so we know through inhalation we're getting it, and we know it sticks to our body and our largest organ, the skin. So what are we doing to mitigate that?
Right. So there have to be ways to get rid of it. Now, what we're going to be doing now, folks, is we're going to be talking about a product. This is not a sell. This is simply to inform you about a product. This is why we did the full disclosure for Brad at the beginning, that that Brad is a part owner of a distribution company for this product called Hygienol. But we're here today talking about the issue in and of itself, that the contaminants that we face, and the fact is that the basic exercises that we would undergo to get rid of something as simple just by washing it off does not work for a lot of these compounds, especially the carcinogenic ones and the ones that can actually stick to that soap and water won't wash off and stick to us. So we're going to, this next part of it, we're going to be talking about a product, and we're also going to talk about some of the challenges that any product that a department could have with any product, because we still want to make sure, no matter what the financial abilities of a department is, that they can keep their firefighters safe, because that's what this is all about, is keeping firefighters safe and healthy. All right, so let's continue on, Brett.
Yeah, so I obviously would love to talk about that too, and I'll get to it, but I just want to preface before that, there are tons of things that you can do, little things you can do to help mitigate. I mean, what we want to do is mitigate our exposure.
Right.
So, time, you know, like same thing with hazmat, for time, distance, all that stuff. So things you can do, like shutting the door to your turnout room so that when you pull into your bay, the exhaust isn't coming out. One of the worst things when you start an engine is the initial startup, is when all that exhaust comes out and the benzenes are released. This might not be in your policy, but thinking about kind of shutting down the rig and, for lack of a better term, ghost riding into the apparatus bay so that you're not blasting exhaust diesel particulates into your apparatus bay prior to coming in. Opening up the front door and back door when you come into the station with your rig. Just proper, you know, hygiene and cleaning when you get done with a scene. Anything is better than nothing right now. So right. Taking that shower quickly when you get back from being in any IDLH atmosphere to get off some of those toxins that soap and water will get off, those, you know, negative charged particles that will easily be removed by soap and water. You know, looking at specking your engines to not have carpet in them and having clean surfaces that you can clean off. Looking at keeping your BAs in an outside compartment when you spec out your engine. Looking at a hood exchange system so you're not using the same hood and you have that wash cycle for your PPE and getting that PPE cleaned as soon as possible. So, yeah, I mean, Hygienol, soap and water, obviously. Soap's been around forever and proper hygiene is good. But those aren't designed to remove these highly carcinogenic toxins that stick to our body with those charges like heavy metals, hexavalent chromium, and lead oxide. And we want to remove those before we go home and expose that to our kids and family and even the kids that come around the station. I mean, we do station tours all the time. I think Miami, one of your departments out there, put together an awesome video on toxic handoff with particulate and shows how when they come home from or come back to the station from fire call, it's getting on the coffee cup, it's getting on the table where you eat.
It's funny.
And then they show the kids come to the station and they're shaking the kids' hands and tapping them, and that particulate is getting transferred over to the kids that are coming to the station.
I was just going to talk about the whole concept of, as you started with bringing the apparatus back, the whole concept of cross-contamination. And it is a vicious cycle that we need to break its bond someplace, because from the moment, if you don't decon on scene, which we'll talk about in a moment, just do a gross decon on scene, when you climb into your seat on the engine or your ladder truck or your tanker, you're now contaminating that seat and the and the metal. So you ride back to the bay. Now, everything else that you've put back on the apparatus, on the scene, is contaminated. So now all that contamination is coming in to the bay. You wash down the engine with a hose with a good strong nozzle on it. And you're doing that in the bay, and all that's going on your bay floor. Some of it goes down the little drains that are built in, but some of it just puddles on the floor, and you take the mop and you, you know, push it away, and that mop is not contaminated. Now you go to the cooler, and you get yourself a drink of cold water, and you lean against the wall with one hand, and you press the button with the other. So now the cooler and the wall is contaminated.
It's constant. You take a shower and you come back and touch the engine that you haven't cleaned, bang, and now you're disinfected again.
Exactly. So this cross contamination is this vicious cycle.
Yeah. So Hygenol actually has a patented technology. NIOSH actually developed it over 10 years ago, but it's been vastly improved upon throughout the years, and it was predominantly used in the military for the aviation, where they use a lot of hexavalent chromium. Hexavalent chromium is a good prevents oxidization, so you see in boats and in aircraft a lot, and these workers are being exposed to it, and we're getting exposed to the same stuff, and that technology is developed to remove all these heavy metals. And we talked about hexavalent chromium 1 because it's the most carcinogenic thing NIOSH has deemed, and lead, because lead is probably one of the hardest things to remove from, and that's in a cationic state. So Hygenol has patented technology that will remove all this stuff, and it's funny if you dive into the science behind it, it's all natural ingredients. It's actually a derivative of corn that takes this off, but it has a high
corn.
ISML. So it has a high negative charge that's greater than what our body is. So it'll remove the bad toxins and positive toxins from our skin. And it has been studied and third-party tested. There's been over $14 million in research. They're probably the number one agency over any university or anybody who's researched this stuff on hygiene, contaminants, and decon stuff. And has been tested at a 99% efficacy on this stuff. So there's science-based fact behind it that it is working, and it is mitigating the hazards and contaminants that we're being exposed to and that are carcinogenic to us.
Wow, that's to have something made out of corn. I don't think anybody 50 years ago could have believed what could come out of a product like corn, that the uses that we found today.
Yeah, so we're not using chemicals to clean chemicals. That's the good news.
Yeah, well, you know what? And that's really different, because I think most of us don't realize that that's what basically has always been the case. We've always used one chemical to clean up something else, whether it's a simple spill on the counter in the kitchen of something that, you know, the paper towel itself won't pick it up. So you grab a spray bottle of something under the sink and you spray it on, you clean it, and boom, it's done. But to have something that comes from corn, first it was, you know, the ethanol breakthrough. And now to think that something as powerful as an agent that can help clean these kind of contaminants off of us and our equipment can be made from corn must make corn farmers very, very happy, I would imagine, because it's another big market. And since it's new to us, but like you said, they've been using it, I guess, in the Department of Defense for 10 years now, you said, right?
Yeah, it was developed a while ago, and Hygenol took over the patent and improved upon it. And you know, the research and the $14 million they've done is just basically on hygiene. So knowing that our skin is the largest organ in our body, it doesn't remove any of the natural oils, and it doesn't need to, because a lot of those contaminants that get on our body, like the regular soot and stuff, they'll embed it in our skin like that. It will remove all that stuff, plus these heavy metals, and it keeps the pH of our skin intact. It doesn't disrupt any of that stuff. It doesn't have any softeners. It doesn't need to, because some of the soaps and stuff, they're designed to remove the oils from our skin. So they need those softeners to kind of replace that soft feeling, so your hands aren't dry and stuff like that. And this doesn't affect any of that.
Wow.
So keeps the natural pH, and it's good stuff for you.
Good. All right. So, you know what? We're going to take a break here, folks. And when we come back, we're going to finish up. We're talking about the different types of items that this product can be used in, because it comes in various forms. And we're also going to talk about, you know, what if there's a financial challenge? What do you do? What can you do with that? And Brad's going to talk about that as well. So we'll be right back with our guest, Brad Byan, and talking about the need for decon in the fire service and what we are facing today right after these words. So please stay tuned. You are listening to Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. Remember when you were a young boy or girl and someone bullied you or teased you? Where did you most often turn to? Like many of us, you turned to your family. If you're a first responder, you probably no longer worry about those childhood problems. But there are plenty more that can affect us. Lack of sleep, the tragedy and horror we often see, even life's everyday stumbling blocks like family illness, money, and job problems, and more. So where do we turn now? Your gut reaction might be to keep it to yourself and not tell anyone about the hell you're going through. However, that's not going to help you or anyone else. Instead, you could start with your second family, someone you work with at the firehouse, on the ambulance, or at the station house. You spend a lot of time with them, don't you? And most of them understand many of the problems you're dealing with. Reach out to a coworker or an officer you trust. Speak to clergy of your house of worship. But don't keep it inside, gnawing away at you. That's not good for you or anyone around you. Know that there are people who stand ready to listen to you and help you without passing judgment. Remember, to carry out your oath to protect life and property, the first life you have to care for is your own. This message is brought to you by this podcaster. He's been there and done it. If you enjoy listening to Five Alarm Task Force, then why not share the news? No, not just on social media, but around town. We've just opened our little shop of wonders with our friends at Teespring. We have 4 t-shirts available, each with our 4-color logo on the front, and on the back, your choice of a listener, supporter, or responder wording, or choose the T with the words of wisdom from our good friend, Chief Robert Fling, all available in varied colors. Prefer to add a new mug for your collection at the firehouse or at home? We have 2, with the full title of the podcast in slightly different fonts, also in several colors. The best part? No matter which items you choose, you'll know that a portion of the net proceeds will be donated to the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation, just as I did with my book, Fish Out of Water, 2 Jewish Guys in a Deep South Firehouse, available on Amazon. Want to browse? Want to buy? Just head over to bit.ly/DalmatStore with a capital D and a capital S, or dial up our website at www.dalmatianproductions.tv and select the podcast promo tab. As always, thank you for listening and stay safe. And welcome back to this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for first responders. And today my guest is Brad Byan. He is a firefighter engineer in California, and he too, as we are here at Five Alarm Task Force, is very concerned with the problem that we're facing, a severe problem of the growing rate of cancer in the fire service and what's causing it. And that's the contamination that we're finding in the items that are burning in America, and not just America, in the world today. So, by the way, this cancer problem is not unique to the United States. We've seen the same thing happening with our colleagues and comrades in the UK, in Europe, in the Far East. We have listeners in over 60 countries to this podcast, and we've seen the messages and stuff that everybody, almost everybody, is finding these same problems. It wasn't until, just as we started out the show, more recently, in the last 5 to 10 years, that we've really seen and discovered what's causing it and come up with ways to mitigate it, because that's our goal. Our goal is not to take you out of the fire service. Our goal is, we don't want you sick. We want you well and be a strong, healthy firefighter. And to do that, we have to mitigate the enemy. That's what it is. And these carcinogens and toxins are the enemy. So, Brad, let's get back to it and talk about the kind of things we can use to mitigate these problems.
Yeah, exactly. And let's make a quick point. I mean, there's no known, safe all cure for cancer.
Right.
Right. Like we don't have something to say, hey, do this and you won't get cancer.
That's correct.
What we do know is the facts that we are exposed to these carcinogens, and NIOSH has deemed what we are exposed to as carcinogenic. So how do we mitigate that? You know, we've talked a lot about decon. There's kind of a full 360 solution that the fire service as a whole, the ideal Cadillac system could implement. And let's start with one. One is just the mindset, right?
Right.
So we're changing our perspective on things and our thought process on how we're dealing with these fires and how we are exposed to these fires and what we're going to do for it. You know, not wearing BAs and overhaul. You think the fire's out, but we're still exposed to all that stuff floating around in the air, right?
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
We have these carbon monoxide meters that say, hey, if it's below this level, you don't have to wear your BA. Well, is that really the case now? Can we kind of reprogram our thought process of why we need to wear BAs in overhaul? And if not a BA, what about just an N95 mask? You know, it's not ideal, obviously, to be cumbersome by a mask and breathe that. But I mean, look at the alternative of what we're breathing in. So I think just overall the thought process and the education piece, you know, what we're doing now is get out there. It's a relatively, you know, the last I've kind of heard about it, and it might just because I'm in it now, is the kind of the last 2 years of really talking about it. And that's just the surface of educating ourselves. You know, not like I said before, knowledge is power. The more we know, the more we can combat this problem and mitigate it efficiently.
Right.
So a lot of things that I've heard about, you know, right now in the fire service, the topic is gross decon on scene, which is awesome. You know, let's come out of the fire after it's extinguished, overhaul is done, and we're ready, before we're ready to go home, let's go through kind of that hazmat scenario where we're going through a gross decon and getting all those big elements off of us with a dry brush and water and just a quick rinse off. So Hygenol actually has a product for each one of those stages of the 360 solution. So for your turnout gear on scene and equipment, same technology that we talked about before, has it in the wipes, and they have a product called Toxoff, which is a spray bottle. So Toxoff, it's 1851 compliant. You spray your gear down, gets rid of all those chemicals that we talked about that sticks to all the surfaces that's hard to get off, and those heavy metals. And taking our gear off, how are we taking our gear off, and what's the sequence? I don't know if a lot of people are familiar with the Schefelte model, the Swedish model that they use out there, which is a great way to remove your gear. You want to try and keep your BA on as you're taking your gear off, because
right,
some of those particulates aerosolize and atomize, and you can breathe it in, and that your BA is probably one of the last things you want to take off. Being a firefighter myself, is it practical? It's not the most practical thing, but it is the best way to remove your gear. I know after, you know, we've had a job and you're been in there for probably a couple bottles through, gone through rehab, you're broke off and you just want to get that stuff off of you as soon as possible. But let's kind of try and reprogram our brains to think about, hey, let's take that extra time to remove that gear properly, do the gross decon, get that stuff off. Now, what are we going to do with our gear? That stuff's contaminated. You know, let's bag it up. Let's put it up above before, you know, up above and not in the cab, so we're not contaminating the cab where we sit every day. And what do we do when we get back? Well, let's wash that gear. So that Toxoff, you know, they have the same technology. It's 1851 compliant for PPE. Let's wash it with that stuff and get all those heavy metals and nasty contaminants off her gear and get into a new fresh set that's clean.
All right, hold on one second. I just want to bring up one point that is a frequent argument. I'm sure you've heard it already. When we talk about bagging the gear and people say, wait a second, we can't bag the gear because what if we have another run? Well, very few unless you're in a real busy urban area, very rarely will you come out of a working, like a 2 to 3 hour working structure fire, and on your way back to the barn, get shouted, you know, alarmed out to another working structure fire or something like that. So most of the time, even if you only have one set of gear, because a lot of departments can't afford that second set at this time, because it's, you know, we know that this is a new idea, and so financing is in front of everybody's thought with that. You can back up your gear safely, put it away, get it into the station and wash it off, get it cleaned up so that as quickly as possible, so that, yes, you'll have your set of gear ready to roll as quickly as possible. But don't use the, well, what if we get another call as an excuse not to take care of your gear properly.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to be practical and use common sense. If you have another call and you're on your way back and need your gear, you're going to
grab it.
You know, break out your gear and grab it and go do your job accordingly. You know, in Detroit, it's probably highly likely that you could get another call, and those guys in back east and those big departments can get multiple jobs and go from job to job to job, where they have people dedicated to just reloading their hose for them. So, yeah, and you look at anything in implementation, there's the good, better, and best. So let's at least start with the good. If we can get better, let's get better. If we can do the best and it's within our realm of reality and we're able to implement it, let's do the best if we can. But let's know what those options are so that we can implement one of them and start with at least something.
Right.
So these are just, these are just the best ways to do it and, you know, mitigate it and adjust it as you see fit and what works for your agency and you personally. So getting that gear, getting it cleaned, washing it. You know, some departments are implementing just the hood exchange system,
right,
where they can't do a full set of gear, but at least they're exchanging their hoods, which is around our neck and, you know, our face and stuff like that. So after you take that gear off on scene, bag it up, immediately rinse off or wipe off with something. Like I said, do something. Whatever you have right now or can do, do something and get those particulates off that will come off. I say, you know, obviously those heavy metals and stuff, you can, the technology with hygienol, you'll be able to take that extra step and get all those carcinogenics off you right on scene and in that first initial stage of getting that stuff off of your skin. Now, when you go back to the station, hopefully the first thing you do is, you know, obviously clean the equipment and gear and get back ready for service as fast as you can. But then take that shower. You know, getting that stuff off you in the shower. And Hygienol has a soap with the technology in it, same technology to get all that stuff off for your showers and decon. So they're implementing the full 360 line of full spectrum cleaning through all the phases of decon, and it's taking it beyond the initial on-scene stuff and back of the station. So that talks off with your gear and talks off for your station. We talked about the toxic handoff, and you talked about all the ways that it's transferring the thing. That talks off works for cleaning your station. So all that chemicals and stuff you're doing for your daily chores and, you know, cleaning the bathrooms and cleaning your kitchen and stuff, you know, use the decon product to clean all that stuff and get all the nasty stuff off.
I hope they have a heavy duty version for firehouse bathrooms, right?
Yeah. It goes along with that special toilet paper.
Yeah.
So, and then all that, you know, say you get like heavy oil and grease on you, just came out with a new product called a hand scrub, which is a pumice. So a lot of that stuff has kind of sand in it, which actually breaks your skin open and allows toxins to go in. This is a pumice that slowly breaks down. It's actually good for your skin and gets all that heavy grease and stuff. Like I said, same technology in it. So there's a full line of products to mitigate every step of the decon process. And, you know, let's start talking about what goes beyond the on-scene decon. But having that initial thing, having some type of decon kit on your rig and your tools, you know, it's a tool in the toolbox that we can use to mitigate for ourselves.
Right. And that's what we want to do. I mean, listen, none of us want to bring this home. That's for sure. No matter how much you love the job, okay, nobody wants to bring this home.
No, I mean, we say every day our number one job is to go home safely.
Exactly.
Well, this is a prolonged effect that needs to be addressed every single day and every single shift that we're working, so that we don't have those cumulative effects, you know, hamper us down the line in our career.
Exactly. So, you know, if you can get your department to think about, you know, just beginning a mitigation process one way. And I think one of the important things that Brad's saying here is, and we talked about this as the intro to the segment, is, you know, what if your department doesn't have a lot of funding? You can't do the whole thing. Well, you don't start with the whole thing. You, as Brad said, you can start with just some basic decon on scene. Do as much as you can on the scene. You get what you can afford for doing an on scene. You get back to the station. You're careful with what you do at the station, and you shower within the hour. Okay, mm-hmm. And you start with that, and you can grow from there. You know, it's like when I wrote an article about leadership that was in Firehouse on firehouse.com, and what I said was, you know, nobody's born a leader. Leaders are self-made. Mm-hmm. The fact is, though, that we can grow a leader. We can plant a seed and help mentor someone to become a leader. And you can do the same thing here. You might not be able to start with the full-blown decon program for the entire department and every station house, but you can begin with a small amount to do the basic stuff to help mitigate on scene before your firefighters get back on the truck and come back to the station. And you do it that shower within the hour, and you've started. That's it. You started the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. And as your life and your budget progresses, and you do whatever you can, you do other health initiatives in your department, as things progress, you start adding more until you get to a point where your department hopefully will get into a full spectrum mitigation program for the dangers that we face from toxins and carcinogenic items.
You know what I love about what you said about leadership? Every great leader is an apprentice of somebody, right?
Absolutely.
So if you can look at some of these big departments and have the funds and means to implement, you know, the best Cadillac solution, look at those and take from those what you can and cherry pick what works for you and what is available to you for right now, and come up with those plans, those 5, 10, 20 year goals of how you're going to either grow or make it more efficient. You know, one thing I love about the fire service is the knowledge sharing that we have. You know, you have your veterans in the fire service, and, you know, my department locally in my department, and then just the fire service in general that you look up to, and having them pass on that knowledge down to me and looking up to them, and now getting a chance to take that step and pass the knowledge down to somebody else. And I think that's what kind of a key core component of what the fire service is sharing that knowledge and passing it down and helping each other. I mean, we're out there helping the citizens we serve every single day, but helping internally the fire service for one another is a great blessing in itself as well. And what I love about this fire service.
Amen.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. That was a great point.
So if you need help, I mean, I'm open to helping some, you know, volunteer fire departments. Like you said, what those challenges that we have, and inherently financially, it's a challenge, right? Because this stuff costs money to implement. There's no kind of sugarcoating that. And with the way the fire service is, I run an EMS budget, and constantly I'm looking at ways to save money. My chief is giving me ways to save money so that we can save the fire service and what we do and work more effectively and efficiently. But just so say you can do a basic, there's a 2.5 reducer to garden hose, right? Right. And that costs probably $23. Put it at the end of your 2.5 and connect the hose garden hose to it, and now you're rinsing down on scene. And that's one way you can start the decon process if that's all you have, is getting that gross decon off. $3 brush from Home Depot, brushing those hard particulates off and getting those main things off of you before you come back to the station. If that's all you have and that's all you can implement, hey, that's great. Let's start there. There's some grants that are out there. You know, I think it'll become more and more, but the Kearney Foundation is donating stuff to fire departments.
Right.
And you can apply for grants. There's other people that are helping out and see this as a big thing. You know, just the government realizing this and starting the registry for cancer, that's a huge step forward coming from the top down of things to come and hopefully addressing this more. Plus, anywhere from insurance companies and workers' comp people are looking at this, and maybe there'll be some tools and implementation things for them, because from a financial standpoint, you retire somebody out that's occupational hazard, that's deemed happened from work, they're going to want to start being a lot more proactive to mitigate this stuff than reactive on this stuff.
Oh, yeah. Even the states that are passing the presumptive occupational cancer bills. That's a big help as well, because now we know in those states that, you know, our brothers and sisters are going to have some financial support from the insurance company for, mm-hmm. if they come down with a form of cancer because of being a firefighter.
Yeah, we're seeing that in Minnesota, where the insurance companies are taking a good look at this stuff and implementing things.
Yeah, it's going to be a long process. It's not going to be an easy process. And sadly, it's our brothers and sisters who have been diagnosed already. You know, I think one of the most difficult facts that I recently found out as I was preparing for a presentation I'm making next week is that in the Boston Fire Department, the average time between diagnoses of cancer from one firefighter to the next is approximately 3 weeks.
It's horrible.
It
shouldn't be like that.
Right.
And hopefully this conversation, this education will start. I mean, it's going to take years to see the effects of it. But if we start now and implementing things now, it hopefully can only get better.
Exactly. Exactly.
And, you know, the volunteers out there, unfortunately for them, they're not covered by a lot of the insurances and stuff. They're donating their time and their essentially body and health to fight these fires and hazards for the citizens on their own accord, at their own risk. With no protection for them. So hopefully we can implement things, you know, more for the volunteer firefighters out there as well that can help them out, you know, either individually as a person or as a department for them.
Great.
Because they shouldn't have to take the burden on themselves.
No, agreed, 100%. Brad, if people have some questions, can they reach you by email?
Yeah, definitely. You can reach me by email, brad@source1mro, it's spelled out one, SourceOneMRO.com, or you can call the toll free line. It's 1-866-768-7230, extension 5. And I'm always I've always been giving back to the fire service and helping people out. So if you have any questions, want to talk more, give me your scenario, what you have, maybe work through some things. We have some SOPs that we can help you with, a bunch of different resources and education materials if you need some more stuff.
That's great. Well, Brad, I want to thank you. It's been a really eye-opening program. These are a lot of the facts that, as you and I talked yesterday in preparation, you know, that we're both well aware of. I hope this for our listeners, some who may have known a little bit about it now know more about it. They know what they can, what to look for, and they know what they can do for simple mitigation to get started, and where to turn for more information. If for any reason, folks, you didn't get Brad's connection information, you can send an email to us here at the studio at dalmatprod@outlook.com, and we're going to put Brad's information on our guest page as well. So we'll put it up there, and then you'll be able to, with all his contact information there, that should be up there later this week. So, Brad, thank you again for everything you do for the fire service. Number one, for your service to the citizens of Southern California, and for helping to give back in as many ways as you do with this stash. What's it called again? The Stashtober.
Stashtoberfest.
Stashtoberfest.
Yeah, the event's actually on Monday. If you want, we've done some videos. It's a cool event. A bunch of firefighters, even women, participate to the extent that they can and grow mustaches. And it's for a good cause and charity and raise money.
That's
help first responders. Just appreciate your time in championing the topic of firefighter cancer and the education piece on DECON, what we can do, and giving this topic a platform to get out there and educate more in the fire service.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And again, folks, if you have any questions, we'll have everything up on the website for you. Brad, again, my sincere thank you. Folks, we'll be right back right after these words. Please stay tuned.
Psst. Yeah, you. It's me, your heart. Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious. And yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active. But lately, you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just gonna keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. Find out how at heart.org/bloodpressure. Check, change, control. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
It just slows me down.
It's too hard to do it and put my gear on.
I'm not comfortable.
I'm a big guy, I can't do it.
I'm just not comfortable wearing it.
You gotta be kidding me. Real firefighters don't need them.
Come on, there's no way I can wear my SCBA and my seatbelt at the same time.
Yes, we've heard all the excuses, but we can think of at least one good reason why you should buckle up. Can't you? Be a hero to those who mean the most to you. Buckle up. A message from the National Fallen Firefighters Foundation.
Hi, folks. This is Steve Green. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. We hope we gave you some excellent information about mitigating the dangers from carcinogens and toxins and how they're preying on the fire service by the brave work that our brothers and sisters do. I want to let you know that this week I'll be heading over to Fort Myers, Florida, on the west, beautiful west coast of the state for the 2018 Great Florida Fire School. Just like last year, I'll be taking photos, videos, interviews, sound bites, and this year I've been invited graciously to teach a course. We'll talk about that as well. So when we get back, it'll take us a couple of weeks to do all the editing, put it up on the website on, again, its own page on www.dalmatianproductions.tv. We have some good things in the works now for you for podcasts coming up in November and December, some special things and a few that we haven't done before. So we hope you'll stick around and keep listening to 5 Alum Task Force News and Issues for today's first responders. As always, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home. Did you know that 90% of American communities are served by volunteer fire departments? And that many of those departments are actively looking for more volunteers? When you hear those sirens, do you say to yourself, "Wish I could do that"? If you have the drive to serve, you can be a volunteer too. Volunteer and combo departments are always looking for new recruits. You'll be trained in the latest firefighting and rescue techniques and protecting your community at the same time. You'll be joining the ranks of over 1 million men and women who serve their cities and towns, protecting lives and property. Did you know that the founder of the first volunteer fire department was Benjamin Franklin? If old Ben can do it, so can you. Drop by your local fire department and introduce yourself. You just might know some of the folks already there. Before you know it, those volunteers will be like family. Anyone can be a volunteer, sure. It takes time and effort, but in your heart, you'll realize that it's all worth it. Want more information? Contact your local fire department or visit makemeafirefighter.org. And that wraps this episode of Five Alarm Task Force, news and issues for today's first responders. We would like to thank our guest, Brad Byan, for joining us to discuss what's really burning and the need for decon. Did you know you can now find us and subscribe to us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and most podcast streaming services? Just search for Five Alarm Task Force. We also want to thank our sponsor, Insight Training LLC, and our promotional partners, Dalmatian Productions, The Firehouse Tribune, Hennessy Distributing, your source for the cool towel, the Firefighter Cancer Foundation, the Firefighter Cancer Support Network, and the 2018 Great Florida Fire School. If you would like to be a guest with us or have a suggestion for a show, please drop us a line to dalmatprod@outlook.com. We want to know that we're bringing you the topics that you are interested in. You can follow us on Twitter at dalmatprod or at cause_origin, and on Facebook at /dalmatprod. And stay up to date with all the news about our podcast, Dalmatian Productions, and our blog at our website, www.dalmatianproductions.tv. I'm Steve Green. Until next time, stay safe, and let's make sure everyone goes home.